Margarita got up from the rug, and then Korovyov appeared in the doorway. Chapter 23. Satan's Grand Ball. Midnight was approaching. They had to hurry. Margarita had only a vague idea of her surroundings. She recalled candles and a pool inlaid with semi-precious stones. Margarita stood on the bottom of the pool while Hella, helped by Natasha, covered her with a hot, thick, red liquid. Margarita tasted salt on her lips and realized she was being washed with blood. The mantle of blood was followed by another, thick, transparent, and pink, and Margarita's head spun from the oil of roses. Next, she was laid on a bed of crystal and rubbed with large green leaves until she sparkled. At this point, the cat burst in and began to help. He squatted at her feet and started polishing the soles of her feet, as if he were a shoeshine boy polishing shoes on the street. Margarita cannot remember who sewed her pale rose-petal slippers or how they got fastened with gold clasps all on their own. Some force lifted Margarita up and stood her in front of a mirror, where she saw a regal diamond tiara sparkling on her head. Korovyov appeared from somewhere and hung on Margarita's breast a heavy, oval-framed picture of a poodle on a heavy chain. This adornment was a great burden to the queen. The chain immediately began chafing her neck, and the weight of the picture caused her to bend forward. But Margarita was rewarded for the discomfort caused by the black poodle and chain. Her reward was the new deference shown her by Korovyov and Behemoth. "Never mind, never mind, never mind," mumbled Korovyov in the doorway of the room with the pool. "There's nothing you can do. You just have to wear it. You have to, you have to. Allow me, Your Majesty, to give you one last bit of advice. The guests will be a diverse lot. Oh, very diverse. But, Queen Margot, whatever you do, don't show any partiality. Even if you take a dislike to someone. I know that you, of course, will not show this on your face. No, no, don't even think of it. He'll notice it. He'll notice it right away. You have to like him. You have to like him, Your Majesty. The hostess of the ball will be rewarded for that 100 times over. And another thing, don't ignore anyone. Give a little smile if you don't have time for a word. Even the tiniest nod of your head will do. Anything you wish, but not indifference. That causes them to wither. Accompanied by Korovyov and Behemoth, Margarita stepped out of the room with the pool into total darkness. "I'll do it. I'll do it," whispered the cat. "I'll give the signal." "Do it," Korovyov replied in the darkness. "Let the ball begin," yelled the cat shrilly, and Margarita at once let out a scream and shut her eyes for several seconds. The ball descended upon her immediately as light combined with sound and smell. Carried along on Korovyov's arm, Margarita found herself in a tropical forest. Red-breasted, green-tailed parrots clung to liana vines, hopping all about and shouting deafeningly, "Delighted to see you!" But the forest came to an abrupt end, and its bathhouse humidity was replaced by the coolness of a ballroom with columns made of a sparkling, yellowish stone. The ballroom, like the forest, was completely empty, except for naked negroes in silver headbands standing motionlessly by the columns. Their faces flushed dark red with excitement when Margarita flew in with her retinue, which now included Azazello, who had materialized from somewhere. Here Korovyov let go of Margarita's arm and whispered, "Go straight to the tulips." A low wall of white tulips rose up in front of Margarita, and beyond it she saw countless shaded lamps, and in front of them the white chests and black shoulders of men in formal dress. Then Margarita realized where the ball music was coming from. A blast of trumpets crashed down on her, and from beneath it a surge of violins broke loose and washed over her body like blood. An orchestra of some 150 men was playing a polonaise. The man in tails on the podium, towering above the orchestra, took one look at Margarita, turned pale, smiled, and with a sudden wave of his hand made the orchestra rise to its feet. Without ceasing to play for an instant, the orchestra, now standing, immersed Margarita in sound. The man, towering above the orchestra, turned his back to it and bowed low, his arms spread wide, and Margarita, smiling, waved at him.
"No, not enough, not enough," whispered Korovyov. "He won't sleep all night. Shout to him, 'I salute you, Waltz King!'"
Margarita did just that, and was amazed to find that her voice, full-throated as a bell, drowned out the sound of the orchestra. The man trembled with happiness and pressed his left hand to his chest, while continuing with his right to conduct the orchestra with a white baton.
"Not enough, not enough," whispered Korovyov. "Look over to your left at the first violins and nod your head so that each one thinks you've recognized him individually. They're all world-famous. Look at the one in the first chair. That's Vuitton. Good, very good. Now, let's move on."
"Who's the conductor?" asked Margarita as she flew away.
"Johann Strauss," cried the cat. "And may they hang me on a liana vine in the tropical forest if an orchestra like this ever played at any other ball. I was the one who sent out the invitations, and, please note, not one of the musicians took sick or refused to play."
The next ballroom had no columns. Instead, on one side were walls of red, pink, and milky white roses, and on the other a wall of Japanese double camellias. Between these walls, fountains gushed and hissed, and champagne frothed, bubbling in three pools, the first of which was clear violet, the second ruby red, and the third crystal. Negroes in scarlet headbands scurried about, pouring silver ladles of champagne from the pools into shallow goblets. Through an opening in the pink wall, a man in a red swallowtail coat could be seen bouncing about excitedly on a stage. In front of him, a jazz band blasted away at an intolerable volume. As soon as the conductor saw Margarita, he made such a low bow that his hands touched the floor. Then he straightened up and let out a piercing yell, "Hallelujah!" He slapped himself once on one knee, then crossed one hand over the other and slapped his other knee twice, grabbed a cymbal from the musician nearest him, and struck it against a pillar. As she flew off, Margarita saw only that the jazz virtuoso, competing with the polonaise that was blaring at Margarita's back, was beating his cymbals over his musicians' heads while they cringed in mock terror. Finally, they flew out to the landing, where, Margarita realized, Korovyov had first greeted her in the dark with a lamp. Now the landing was flooded with blinding light pouring out of crystal lamps shaped like grape clusters. Margarita was shown to her place, and a low amethyst column appeared beneath her left arm.
"You can rest your hand on it if you get tired," whispered Korovyov.
A black-skinned man tucked a pillow embroidered with a gold poodle under Margarita's feet, and, with someone's hands guiding her, Margarita bent her right knee and put her foot on the cushion. Margarita tried to look around. Korovyov and Azazello were standing nearby in ceremonial poses. Next to Azazello were three young men who vaguely reminded Margarita of Abaddon. She felt a chill on her back. When Margarita turned around, she saw that wine was bubbling out of the marble wall behind her and flowing into a pool sculpted out of ice. She felt something warm and furry by her left foot. It was Behemoth. Margarita was standing at a great height, and a vast carpeted staircase descended beneath her feet. Down at the bottom, so far away that Margarita felt she was gazing through the wrong end of binoculars, she could see an enormous foyer with a fireplace so huge that a 5-ton truck could drive into its cold black maw. The foyer and staircase, so brightly lit that they pained the eyes, were empty. The sound of trumpets now reached Margarita from the distance. Thus they stood that way for a minute or so, without moving.
"But where are the guests?" Margarita asked Korovyov.
"They'll be here, Your Majesty. They'll be here any minute. There'll be no lack of them, and to be honest, I'd rather be chopping wood than standing here on this landing to receive them."
"Chopping wood is nothing," interjected the garrulous cat. "I'd rather be a streetcar conductor, and there's no job in the world worse than that."
"Everything has to be ready in advance, Your Majesty," explained Korovyov, his eye gleaming through the cracked monocle. "There's nothing worse than having the first guest roam around without knowing what to do while his lawful shrew of a wife scolds him in a whisper for their being the first to arrive. Balls like that should be done away with entirely, Your Majesty." done away with entirely, affirmed the cat.
Not more than 10 seconds till midnight, added Korovyov. It's about to start.
Those 10 seconds seemed extraordinarily long to Margarita. They appeared to have passed already, yet absolutely nothing had happened. Then, suddenly, there was a loud crash in the enormous fireplace at the bottom of the stairs, and out popped a gallows with a dangling corpse half turned to dust. This dust shook itself off the noose, fell to the ground, and out jumped a handsome, black-haired fellow in tails and patent leather shoes. Out of the fireplace slid a small, semi-rotted coffin. Its top flew off, and another clump of dust tumbled out of the coffin. The handsome fellow rushed gallantly over to it and extended a bent arm. The second clump of dust formed itself into a fidgety, naked woman in black evening slippers with black feathers on her head, and then both the man and the woman began hurrying up the staircase.
"The first guests!" exclaimed Korovyov. "Monsieur Jacques and his wife, may I introduce you, Your Majesty, to a most interesting man. An inveterate counterfeiter and traitor to his country, but a very good alchemist. He won fame," whispered Korovyov in Margarita's ear, "for poisoning the king's mistress, and that's not something that happens to everyone. Look how handsome he is."
A distinctly pale Margarita, her mouth agape, looked downwards and saw the coffin and gallows disappear through a side door in the foyer.
"Delighted to see you!" howled the cat right in Monsieur Jacques' face as he reached the top of the stairs.
Meanwhile, down below, a headless skeleton with one arm torn out of its socket had emerged from the fireplace, hit the floor, and turned into a man in tails. Monsieur Jacques' wife was already down on one knee in front of Margarita, and pale from excitement, she kissed Margarita's knee.
"Your Majesty," murmured Monsieur Jacques' wife.
"Her Majesty is delighted," cried Korovyov.
"Your Majesty," said the handsome Monsieur Jacques softly.
"We're delighted," howled the cat.
The young men, Azazello's companions, smiling lifeless but polite smiles, guided Monsieur Jacques and his wife over to the side, to the goblets of champagne which the negroes were holding. Coming up the stairs at a run was a solitary man in tails.
"Count Robert," whispered Korovyov to Margarita. "Intriguing, as always. Note the humor, Your Majesty. The same case in reverse. He was a queen's lover and poisoned his wife."
"We are happy, Count," cried the cat.
One after the other, three coffins tumbled out of the fireplace, splitting open and breaking apart on impact. Then someone in a black cloak appeared, who was then stabbed in the back by the next to follow him out of the black maw. A muffled scream was heard below. Out of the fireplace ran an almost totally decomposed corpse. Margarita grimaced, and somebody's hand held a vial of smelling salts to her nose. It seemed to Margarita that the hand was Natasha's. The staircase began to fill up with people. Now on every step were men in tails, who all looked completely alike from a distance, and naked women who differed from each other only by their shoes and the color of the feathers on their heads. Approaching Margarita, and hobbling in a strange wooden boot on her left foot, came a lady whose eyes were cast down like a nun's. She was thin, humble-looking, and for some reason had a wide, green bandage around her neck.
"Who's the green one?" queried Margarita mechanically.
"A most charming and reputable lady," whispered Korovyov. "May I present to you Signora Tofana? She was extremely popular among the charming young ladies of Naples, as well as the female residents of Palermo, especially those who were sick of their husbands. It does happen, Your Majesty, that a woman gets sick of her husband."
"Yes,"
was Margarita's hollow reply, as she smiled at two men in tails who bowed to her one after the other, kissing her knee and her hand.
"And so," said Korovyov, managing to whisper in Margarita's ear, while also shouting to someone, "Duke, a glass of champagne! Delighted to see you!" "And so, as I was saying, Signora Tofana sympathized with these poor women's predicament and sold them vials of some kind of potion. The wife would pour it into her husband's soup. The husband would eat it, thank her for her tender attention, and feel marvelous. True, a few hours later, the husband would develop a terrible thirst, then take to his bed, and the day after that, the beautiful Neapolitan lady who had fed her husband the soup would be as free as the spring breeze."
"And what's that on her foot?" asked Margarita, continuing to greet the guests who had overtaken the hobbling Signora Tofana. "And why is that green thing on her neck? Is her neck withered?"
"Delighted to see you, Prince," cried Korovyov,
while whispering to Margarita.
"She has a splendid neck, but something unpleasant happened to her in prison. That's a Spanish boot on her foot, Your Majesty, and here's how she got the bandage. When the jailers found out that 500 or so ill-chosen husbands had left Naples and Palermo permanently, they became enraged and strangled Signora Tofana in prison."
"How happy I am, Black Queen, for the great honor that has befallen me," whispered Tofana in a nun-like voice, attempting to get down on her knee. The Spanish boot impeded her. Korovyov and Behemoth helped Tofana to get up.
"I'm glad to see you," replied Margarita to Tofana while extending her hand to others.
A steady stream of guests was now coming up the stairs. Margarita could no longer see what was going on in the foyer. She raised and lowered her hand mechanically, and baring her teeth monotonously, smiled at the guests. The air on the landing hummed continuously, and the music coming from the ballrooms Margarita had left behind sounded like the sea.
"Now that woman there is a bore," said Korovyov,
not in a whisper but out loud, knowing that he could not be heard above the hum of voices.
"She adores balls, yet all she can think of is to complain about her handkerchief."
Margarita scanned the crowd coming up the stairs and found the woman Korovyov was pointing to. She was a young woman of about 20, with an unusually stunning figure, but with agitated and insistent eyes.
"What handkerchief?" asked Margarita.
"She has a chambermaid assigned to her," explained Korovyov, "and every night for 30 years the maid has laid out a handkerchief for her on her night table. The minute she wakes up, she sees it there. She's tried burning it in the stove and drowning it in the river, but nothing helps."
"What kind of handkerchief?" whispered Margarita, raising and lowering her hand.
"A handkerchief with a dark blue border. The fact is that when she was a waitress in a cafe, her boss lured her into the storeroom one day, and 9 months later she gave birth to a baby boy, carried him into the woods, stuffed the handkerchief in his mouth, and then buried him in the ground. At her trial, she said she had nothing to feed the child."
"And where's the owner of the cafe?" asked Margarita.
"Your Majesty," squeaked the cat suddenly from below, "allow me to ask you, what does the owner have to do with this? He wasn't the one who smothered the baby in the woods."
Margarita, continuing to smile and shake hands with her right hand, sank the sharp nails of her left hand into Behemoth's ear and whispered, "If you dare, you bastard, to butt into the conversation one more time." Behemoth let out a highly unceremonious squeal and rasped,
"Your Majesty, my ear will swell up. Why spoil the ball for me with a swollen ear? I was speaking legalistically, from the legal point. I'll be quiet, I'll be quiet. Think of me not as a cat, but a fish. Only leave my ear alone."
Margarita let go of his ear and saw a pair of importunate, somber eyes in front of her.
"I am happy, Hostess Queen, to have been invited to the grand ball of the full moon."
"And I," replied Margarita, "am glad to see you. Very glad indeed. Do you like champagne?"
"What do you presume to be doing, Your Majesty?"
yelled Korovyov in Margarita's ear in mute desperation.
"You'll cause a traffic jam."
"Yes, I do," said the woman imploringly, and suddenly began repeating mechanically, "Frida, Frida, Frida, my name is Frida, Your Majesty. Drink as much as you want tonight, Frida, and don't worry about anything," said Margarita.
Frida stretched out both her hands to Margarita, but Korovyov and Behemoth, with great finesse, grabbed her under her arms, and she was lost in the crowd. A wall of people was now advancing up the staircase, as if about to storm the landing where Margarita stood. Naked female bodies moved up the stairs in between tail-coated men. Their bodies, swarthy, white, coffee-colored, or completely black, swept up against Margarita. In their red, black, chestnut, and flaxen hair, precious stones sparkled, playing and dancing in the downpour of light. And the advancing column of men looked as if it had been sprayed with droplets of light, light splashed by the diamond studs on their chests.
Now, every second, Margarita felt the touch of lips against her knee. Every second, she stretched out her hand to be kissed, her face tensed in a mask of welcome.
"I'm delighted to see you," crooned Korovyov in a monotone. "We are delighted. Her Majesty is delighted."
"Her Majesty is delighted," said Azazello in a nasal twang behind her.
"Delighted," cried the cat.
"The Marquise," mumbled Korovyov, "poisoned her father, two brothers, and two sisters because of an inheritance.
Her Majesty is delighted.
Lady Minkina, ah, how lovely you look. She's a bit nervous. Why was it necessary to burn the maid's face with a curling iron? Naturally, that sort of behavior can get you murdered.
Her Majesty is delighted.
Your Majesty, a minute of your attention. Emperor Rudolf, wizard and alchemist. Here's another alchemist. He was hanged. Ah, here she is. Ah, what a marvelous brothel she had in Strasbourg.
We're delighted to see you.
A Moscow dressmaker. We all love her for her inexhaustible imagination. She had a salon and thought up something terribly amusing. She drilled two cute little round holes in the wall.
And the ladies didn't know? Asked Margarita.
Every last one of them knew, Your Majesty, replied Korovyov.
Delighted to see you.
This 20-year-old rascal, a dreamer and an eccentric, was remarkable for the strange fantasies he had since childhood. A certain young woman fell in love with him, and he went and sold her to a brothel.
A river streamed from below. The end of the river was nowhere in sight. Its source, the huge fireplace, continued to feed it. Thus 1 hour passed, and the second began. At this point, Margarita began to notice that her chain had become heavier than it had been. Something strange had also happened to her hand. Lifting it made her wince. Korovyov's interesting remarks ceased to engage Margarita, and the slant-eyed Mongol faces and the white and black faces became indistinguishable from each other, and merged together at times, and the air between them began, for some reason, to quiver and undulate. A sharp pain as from a needle suddenly pierced Margarita's right hand, and clenching her teeth, she lay her elbow on the pedestal. A rustling sound, like wings flapping against a wall, came from the ballroom behind her, and she realized that countless hordes of guests were dancing there, and it seemed to Margarita that even the massive marble, mosaic, and crystal floors in that remarkable room were pulsating with rhythm. Neither Gaius Caesar Caligula nor Messalina aroused Margarita's interest now. Nor did any of the other assorted kings, dukes, cavaliers, suicides, poisoners, gallows birds and procuresses, jailers and card sharps, executioners, informers, traitors, madmen, detectives, corruptors of youth. Their names all got jumbled in her head, their faces melted into one huge blur, and only one face lingered tormentingly in her memory, the face of Malyuta Skuratov, framed by a truly fiery red beard. Margarita's legs were giving way beneath her, and she was afraid of breaking into tears at any minute. But it was her right knee, the one that kept getting kissed, that caused her the worst suffering. It was swollen, and the skin had turned blue, despite the fact that Natasha's hand had appeared to daub the knee with a perfumed sponge. At the end of the third hour, Margarita looked down the staircase with utterly hopeless eyes and then trembled with joy. The stream of guests was thinning out.
"Patterns of arrival at balls are always the same, Your Majesty," whispered Korovyov. "Now the wave has crested. We're in the last throes of this torture, I promise you. Aren't those the playboys from Brocken Peak? They're always the last to arrive. Yes, that's them. Two drunken vampires. Is that everyone? No. Here's one more. No, two." The last two guests came up the stairs. "Well, this is someone new," said Korovyov, squinting through his monocle. "Ah, yes, yes, I seem to recall that Azazello once paid him a visit and gave him some advice over brandy as to how he could get rid of a man whose threats of exposure scared him to death. So he ordered an acquaintance who was his subordinate to spray the walls of the man's office with poison."
"What's his name?" asked Margarita.
"To tell the truth, I still don't know," replied Korovyov. "You'll have to ask Azazello."
"And who's with him?"
"That's the underling who did his bidding."
Delighted!
Roared Korovyov to the last two guests. The stairs were empty. They waited a little bit longer, just to make sure, but no one else emerged from the fireplace. A second later, without knowing how she got there, Margarita found herself once again in the room with the pool, and once there, burst into tears from the pain in her arm and leg and collapsed on the floor. But Hella and Natasha comforted her, again gave her a blood shower, again massaged her whole body, and Margarita came back to life.
"There's more to do, Queen Margot," whispered Korovyov, who had just appeared by her side. "You have to make the rounds of the ballrooms so our honored guests don't feel ignored."
And again Margarita flew out of the room with the pool. On the stage behind the tulips, where the waltz king and his orchestra had been playing, a monkey jazz band now ranted and raged. A huge gorilla with shaggy sideburns and a trumpet in his hand was conducting as he danced ponderously to the beat. In one row sat orangutans blowing shiny trumpets. Perched on their shoulders were merry chimpanzees with accordions. Two baboons with leonine manes were playing grand pianos, and these pianos were drowned out by the thundering, squealing, and banging of saxophones, violins, and drums in the paws of gibbons, mandrills, and marmosets. On the mirror-like floor, countless pairs seemed to merge into one in a remarkable display of agility and gracefulness, all whirling in one direction and moving forward like a wall that threatened to sweep away everything in its path. Live satin butterflies swooped up and down above the dancing hordes. Flowers fluttered down from the ceilings. Whenever the electricity went off, myriad glowworms lit up in the tops of the columns, and will-o'-the-wisps floated in the air. Then Margarita found herself in a monstrously large pool surrounded by a colonnade. A gigantic black Neptune spewed a broad pink stream from his maw. The intoxicating smell of champagne came wafting up from the pool. Unconstrained merriment reigned here. The ladies, laughing, threw off their shoes, gave their handbags either to their escorts or to the negroes running around with sheets in their hands, and swan dived into the pool with shrieks. Columns of spray shot up in the air. The crystal bottom of the pool was lit from below, and the light pierced through the vinous depths, illuminating the silvery swimming bodies. They jumped out of the pool completely drunk. Beneath the columns, the sound of laughter rang and thundered as in a bathhouse. In all the commotion, Margarita remembered one totally drunken female face with glazed yet beseeching eyes, and she recalled one word, Frida. Margarita's head began to spin from the smell of the wine, and she was about to leave when the cat performed a trick in the pool which detained her. Behemoth cast a spell on something near the maw of Neptune, and hissing and bubbling, the bubbly sea of champagne drained from the pool at once, and Neptune started spewing forth a foamless, bubbleless, dark amber wave. The ladies shrieked and squealed, "Brandy!" as they rushed away from the edges of the pool and took refuge behind the columns. The pool was filled in a few seconds, and the cat, after turning three somersaults in the air, landed in the billowing brandy. He crawled out, shaking himself off, his necktie shrunk, his opera glasses and the gilt on his whiskers gone. Only one woman followed Behemoth's example, namely the practical joke-playing dressmaker and her escort, an unknown young mulatto. They both dived into the brandy, but at this point, Korovyov took Margarita by the arm, and they left the bathers behind. It seemed to Margarita that she flew through a place where she saw mountains of oysters and huge stone ponds. Then she was flying over a glass floor with hellish furnaces blazing beneath it and diabolical white chefs scurrying about tending them. Then, somewhere, she was no longer sure where, she saw dark cellars where candelabra were burning, where girls were serving sizzling meat on red-hot coals, and where people were drinking to her health out of large tankards. Then she saw polar bears playing accordions and doing a Russian folk dance on a stage, a salamander magician who was not burning in the fireplace, and for the second time, her strength began to fail her.
"One last entrance," whispered Korovyov anxiously, "and we're free."
Accompanied by Korovyov, Margarita again found herself in the ballroom, but now
No one was dancing, and the countless crowds of guests were all clustered between the columns, leaving the center of the room vacant. Margarita did not remember who helped her ascend a platform that had materialized in the middle of the open space. When she got to the top, she was surprised to hear midnight striking somewhere, since, according to her calculations, midnight had come and gone long ago. When the clock, its location unknown, struck for the last time, silence fell on the crowds of guests. Then Margarita again caught sight of Voland. He was walking, surrounded by Abaddon, Azazello, and several others who resembled Abaddon and were young and black. Margarita now noticed that another platform opposite hers had been prepared for Voland. But he did not use it. What amazed Margarita was that Voland made his last grand entrance at the ball, looking exactly as he had earlier in the bedroom. The same dirty, patched nightshirt hung from his shoulders. His feet still wore their tattered slippers. Voland carried a sword, but he was using the bear's sword as a cane, leaning on it. Limping, Voland stopped beside his platform, and Azazello immediately appeared before him carrying a dish. And on the dish, Margarita saw the severed head of a man whose front teeth had been knocked out. There continued to be absolute silence, which was broken only once by a distant and, under the circumstances, inexplicable ring of what seemed to be a front doorbell.
"Mikhail Alexandrovich," said Voland quietly to the head.
And then the eyelids of the slain man opened, and Margarita shuddered when she saw that the eyes on the dead face were alive and full of thought and suffering.
"Everything came true, didn't it?" continued Voland, looking into the head's eyes. "Your head was cut off by a woman. The meeting never took place. And I'm living in your apartment. That is a fact. And a fact is the most stubborn thing in the world. But now we're interested in facts to be, rather than this already accomplished fact. You were always an avid proponent of the theory that after his head is cut off, a man's life comes to an end. He turns to dust and departs into non-being. I have the pleasure of informing you, in the presence of my guests, although they actually serve as proof of a different theory altogether, that your theory is both incisive and sound. However, one theory is as good as another. There is even a theory that says that to each man it will be given according to his beliefs. May it be so. You are departing into non-being, and from the goblet into which you are being transformed, I will have the pleasure of drinking a toast to being." Voland raised his sword. Here, the skin covering the head darkened and shriveled, then fell off in pieces. The eyes disappeared, and soon Margarita saw on the dish a yellowish, emerald-eyed skull on a gold stem. The top of the skull opened on a hinge.
"This very second, monsieur," said Kuravyov in response to Voland's questioning gaze. "He shall appear before you. In this tomb-like silence, I can hear his patent leather shoes squeaking and his glass tinkling as he puts it down on the table after drinking champagne, the last glass of his life. And here he is now."
A new guest, who was quite alone, entered the ballroom and headed in Voland's direction. On the outside, he was no different from the other male guests, except for one thing. He was so upset he was literally shaking, which was obvious even from far away. Red blotches glowed on his cheeks, and his eyes were darting about with alarm. The guest was flabbergasted, which was completely understandable. Everything he saw astounded him, Voland's outfit in particular. However, the guest was received with marked affection.
"Ah, my dear Baron Maigil," said Voland, with an affable smile as he turned to his guest, whose eyes were popping out of his head. I am delighted to present to you, said Volant to his guests, the highly esteemed Baron Maigel, a member of the theatrical commission whose job is to acquaint foreigners with the sights of the capital. Here Margarita froze, because she suddenly realized who Maigel was. He had crossed her path several times in the theaters and restaurants of Moscow.
Wait a minute, thought Margarita. Does that mean that he's dead too? But the matter was soon clarified.
The kind Baron, continued Volant with a joyous smile, was charming enough to call me as soon as he learned of my arrival in Moscow, and offer me his specialized services, that is, as a guide to the sights of the city. It goes without saying that I was happy to invite him for a visit.
Just then Margarita saw Azazello hand Korovyov the dish with the skull-shaped goblet.
By the way, Baron, said Volant, suddenly lowering his voice and speaking chattily, rumors are circulating regarding your extraordinary inquisitiveness. They say that this, matched with your no less developed talkativeness, has begun to attract general attention. Moreover, spiteful tongues have dropped the words informer and spy. And in addition, there is an assumption that this will lead you to a sorry end in less than a month. And so, to save you the bother of a tiresome wait, we have decided to come to your aid and to take advantage of the fact that you wangled yourself an invitation here with the express purpose of eavesdropping and spying on everything you could.
The Baron became even paler than Abaddon, who was exceptionally pale by nature. And then something strange happened. Abaddon appeared before the Baron and took his glasses off for just a second. At the same moment, something flashed like fire in Azazello's hands, and there was a soft noise like a hand clap, and the Baron started to fall backwards, as scarlet blood spurted from his chest and soaked his starched shirt and vest. Korovyov held the goblet under the pulsing stream, and when it was full, he gave it to Volant. By that time, the Baron's lifeless body was already on the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, I drink to your health, said Volant softly,
and raising the goblet, he touched it to his lips. Then a metamorphosis ensued. The tattered slippers and patched nightshirt disappeared. Volant was now wearing a long black robe with a steel saber on his hip. He walked quickly over to Margarita, raised the goblet to her lips, and in a commanding voice said, "Drink!" Margarita's head began to spin. She swayed. But the goblet was already at her lips, and voices, whose she could not tell, whispered in both her ears, "Don't be afraid, Your Majesty! Don't be afraid, Your Majesty! The blood has already seeped down into the earth, and there where it spilled, clusters of grapes are already growing." Margarita took a swallow without opening her eyes, and a sweet current ran through her veins, and there was a ringing in her ears. It seemed to her that deafening roosters were crowing, that somewhere a march was playing. The crowds of guests began to lose their appearance. The women and the men in tails dissolved into dust. Decay engulfed the ballroom before Margarita's very eyes. A crypt-like smell flowed over it. The columns dissolved, the lights went out, everything shriveled and shrank until there were no fountains, tulips, or camellias. All that was left was what had been there before, the modest living room of the jeweler's wife, and a stream of light coming through the half-opened door. And Margarita walked through this half-opened door.
This ends Disc 10. The Master and Margarita, Disc 11.
Chapter 24. The Liberation of the Master. In Volant's bedroom,
Everything was as it had been before the ball. Volant was sitting in his nightshirt on the bed. Only Hella was no longer massaging his leg, but setting the table, where earlier they had been playing chess, for supper. Korovyov and Azazello had taken off their tailcoats and were sitting at the table. Nestled in next to them was, naturally, the cat, who didn't want to part with his tie, even though by now it was an utterly grubby rag. Swaying on her feet, Margarita walked over to the table and leaned on it. Then, as he had before, Volant beckoned to her to sit down beside him. "Well, now, did they wear you out completely?" asked Volant.
"Oh, no, monsieur," answered Margarita, but barely audibly.
"Noblesse oblige,"
remarked the cat, and he poured Margarita some transparent liquid into an ornate small glass.
"Is that vodka?"
asked Margarita weakly. The cat took offense and jumped up on his chair.
"Excuse me, Your Majesty," he whined, "but how could I offer vodka to a lady? It's pure spirits."
Margarita smiled and made an effort to move the glass away.
"Drink up. Don't be afraid," said Volant, and Margarita picked up the glass.
"Ella, sit down," ordered Volant, as he explained to Margarita, "the night of the full moon is a festive occasion, and I have supper in the company of my intimate associates and servants. And so, how do you feel? How did that wearisome ball go?"
"Stupendously," crackled Korovyov. "Everyone was enchanted, enamored, overwhelmed by her tact, her finesse, her appeal, her charm."
Volant silently raised his glass and clinked it with Margarita's. Margarita drank up obediently, thinking that the spirits would be the end of her, but nothing had happened. An enlivening warmth spread through her stomach. There was a soft thump at the nape of her neck, and her strength returned as if she had just awakened from a long, refreshing sleep. And, in addition, she felt as hungry as a wolf. Her hunger intensified when she recalled that she had not eaten anything since the previous morning. She started to devour the caviar greedily. Behemoth cut off a slice of pineapple, salted and peppered it, ate it, and then downed a second glass of spirits with such dash that everyone broke into applause. After Margarita's second glass of spirits, the candles in the candelabra burned brighter and the flames in the fireplace grew. Margarita did not feel the least bit drunk. Sinking her white teeth into some meat, she savored its succulent juices as she watched Behemoth spread mustard on an oyster.
"You ought to put some grapes on top of that," said Hella softly, poking the cat in the side.
"Please, don't lecture me," replied Behemoth. "I'm an experienced diner. Don't worry, very experienced." "Ah, how nice it is to have supper like this, around the fireplace, without any fuss, an intimate group, as it were," twanged Korovyov. "I disagree, Fagot," retorted the cat. "A ball has a charm and a sweep all its own."
"It has neither sweep nor charm," said Volant. "And those idiotic bears and those tigers roaring in the bar nearly gave me a migraine."
"All right, monsieur," said the cat. "If it is your opinion that there is no sweep, then I shall immediately subscribe to it."
"Watch your step," was Volant's reply.
"I was only joking," said the cat meekly. "And as for the tigers, I'll see that they're roasted."
"You can't eat tigers," said Hella.
"Is that what you think?" retorted the cat. "Then let me tell you a little story."
Narrowing his eyes with pleasure, he told a story about the time when he was wandering in the desert for 19 days, and the only nourishment he had was the meat from a tiger he had killed. Everyone listened to his absorbing narrative with interest, and when Behemoth finished, they all exclaimed in chorus, "All lies!"
"And the most interesting thing about this fabrication," said Volant, "is that it was all lies from start to finish."
"'Is that what you think? That I'm lying?' exclaimed the cat, and everyone thought that he would go on to protest, but instead he said softly, "'History will be the judge.'
"'Tell me,' said Margarita, who had revived after the vodka, addressing Azazello, "'did you really shoot him, that former baron?'
"'Of course I did,' answered Azazello. "'How could I not shoot him? He absolutely had to be shot.'
"'I got so upset,' exclaimed Margarita. "'It happened so unexpectedly.'
"'There was nothing unexpected about it,' retorted Azazello.
But Korovyov began wailing and moaning. "'How could one not get upset? I myself was shaken to the core. Crash! Bang! Over falls the baron!'
"'I was practically hysterical,'
put in the cat, licking a spoonful of caviar. "'But what I don't understand is,' said Margarita, and gold sparks from the crystal flickered in her eyes, "'wouldn't the music and the noise from the ball be audible from outside?'
"'Of course not, Your Majesty,' explained Korovyov. "'It has to be done so that it isn't. It has to be done as carefully as possible.'
Of course, but what about that man on the stairs? When Azazello and I were coming in, and the other one at the entranceway, I think he was watching your apartment.
You're right! You're right! Shouted Korovyov. You're right, dear Margarita Nikolaevna. You've confirmed my suspicions. Yes, he was watching our apartment. At first I thought he might have been an absent-minded professor or a lovesick beau mooning on the staircase. But no, no, something didn't feel right to me. Aha, so he was watching our apartment. And the one at the entranceway, too. And same for the one by the gate.
Won't it be interesting if they do come and arrest you? Asked Margarita.
They'll come all right, enchanting queen. They'll come, replied Korovyov. I feel it in my bones. Not now, of course, but in their good time they're sure to come. But I don't imagine they'll find anything interesting.
Oh, how upset I was when that baron fell, said Margarita, evidently still feeling the after-effects of the first murder she had ever witnessed. You're probably a very good shot.
Not bad, answered Azazello.
At what distance? Margarita asked Azazello rather strangely.
It depends what I'm shooting at, answered Azazello reasonably. It's one thing to hit the critic Latunsky's window with a hammer, and quite another to hit him in the heart.
The heart, exclaimed Margarita, clutching her own for some reason. The heart, she repeated in a hollow voice.
What's this about a critic named Latunsky? Asked Volant, squinting at Margarita.
Azazello, Korovyov, and Behemoth looked down in seeming embarrassment, and Margarita answered with a blush, "'There's a certain critic by that name. This evening, I demolished his entire apartment.'
"'What do you know? But why?'
"'He, Messire,' explained Margarita, "'ruined a certain master.'
"'But why did you go to all that trouble yourself?' asked Volant.
"'Permit me, Messire,' cried the cat, joyously, jumping up.
"'You stay put,' muttered Azazello, standing up. "'I'll go over there right now.'
"'No,' exclaimed Margarita. "'No, Monsieur, I beg you. It's not necessary.'
"'As you wish. As you wish,' replied Volant, and Azazello resumed his place.
"'So where did we leave off, precious Queen Margot?' said Korovyov. "'Ah, yes, the heart. He can hit the heart.
Korovyov pointed his long finger at Azazello.
To order any auricle or any of the ventricles.
Margarita did not grasp the meaning of this immediately, but once she had understood, she exclaimed in amazement, But they're hidden from view.
Dear lady, twanged Korovyov, that's the point, that they're hidden, that's the whole point. Anyone can hit a visible target.
Korovyov took a seven of spades out of the desk drawer, offered it to Margarita, and asked her to mark one of the pips with her fingernail. She marked the one in the upper right-hand corner. Hella hid the card under the pillow and yelled, "Ready!" Azazello, who was sitting with his back to the pillow, pulled a black automatic pistol out of the pocket of his dress trousers, laid the muzzle on his shoulder, and fired without turning to face the bed, thereby giving Margarita a jolt of pleasant fear. The card was removed from the bullet-pierced pillow. It had been hit where Margarita had marked it. "I wouldn't want to run into you when you've got a gun in your hands," said Margarita, looking coquettishly at Azazello. She had a passion for anyone who could do anything really well.
"Precious queen," squeaked Korovyov. "Running into him isn't a good idea, even when he doesn't have a gun. I give you my word of honor as a former choir master and precentor that a meeting with him is unwelcome under any circumstances."
The cat, who had been sitting with a frown on his face during the shooting demonstration, suddenly declared,
"I'm going to try to outdo him with a 7 card."
Azazello hooted something in reply, but the cat was stubborn and asked for not one but 2 guns. Azazello pulled another gun out of his other back trouser pocket and, wearing a disdainful smirk, offered both of them to the braggart. They marked 2 pips on the 7 card. The cat made lengthy preparations after turning his back to the pillow. Margarita sat with her fingers in her ears and looked at the owl dozing on the mantelpiece. The cat shot off both guns, whereupon Hella let out a shriek. The dead owl fell off the mantel and the shattered clock stopped. Hella, one of whose hands was bloodied, howled and dug her nails into the cat's fur, and he responded by grabbing her hair with his claws. They started rolling around the floor in a tangled heap. A goblet fell off the table and smashed to bits.
"Get this crazed she-devil off me," wailed the cat as he tried to fight off Hella, who was sitting on his back.
The combatants were separated. Korovyov blew on Hella's wounded finger, and it was healed.
"I can't shoot when people are distracting me by talking," cried Behemoth, trying to reattach a large clump of fur that had been torn off his back.
"I bet," said Volant, smiling at Margarita, "that he missed on purpose. He's a good shot."
Hella and the cat made up, and as a token of their reconciliation, they kissed. The card was retrieved from under the pillow and checked. No pip had been touched except the one Azazello shot.
"That's not possible," maintained the cat, peering at the candelabrum through the hole in the card.
The merry supper continued. The candles burned down in the candelabra, and the dry, fragrant warmth coming from the fireplace spread through the room in waves. After eating her fill, Margarita was overcome by a feeling of bliss. She watched the bluish-gray smoke rings from Azazello's cigar float into the fireplace, and the cat try to catch them on the end of his saber. She had no desire to go anywhere, although, according to her calculations, it was already very late. Everything considered, it seemed to be approaching 6 in the morning. Taking advantage of the pause, Margarita turned to Volant and said timidly, "I should probably go. It's late."
"Where are you rushing off to?" queried Volant politely, albeit dryly.
The others kept their silence, pretending to be entranced by the smoke rings.
"Yes, it's time to go," repeated Margarita, who was somewhat disconcerted by their response,
and she turned as if in search of a cape or something to put on. Her nakedness had suddenly begun to embarrass her. She got up from the table. Volant quietly removed his soiled and threadbare robe from the bed, and Korovyov threw it over Margarita's shoulders.
"Thank you, monsieur,"
said Margarita in barely audible tones, and she gave Volant a questioning look. He responded with a polite and non-committal smile. Black anguish immediately threatened to engulf Margarita's heart. She felt cheated. No one, it seemed, had any intention of rewarding her for her services at the ball. Nor did they wish to stop her from leaving. And yet, it was perfectly obvious to her that she no longer had any place to go. A fleeting thought that she might have to go back to her house sent a jolt of despair through her. Should she ask for something for herself, as Azazello had so temptingly suggested in the Alexandrovsky Park?
"No, not for anything," she said to herself. "All the best to you, monsieur," she said aloud, all the while thinking, "If I can just get out of here, I'll go down to the river and drown myself."
"Do sit down,"
came Volant's sudden command. A change came over Margarita's face, and she sat down.
"Perhaps you wish to say something before you go."
"No, nothing, monsieur," replied Margarita proudly. "Except, of course, that if you still have need of me, I'm happy to be of service. I'm not in the least bit tired, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself at the ball. So much so that if it had lasted longer, I would have been glad to let thousands more murderers and gallows birds kiss my knee." Her eyes filling with tears, Margarita looked at Volant as through a veil.
"Bravo, you're absolutely right," said Volant in a fearsome, booming voice. "That's the way."
"That's the way," echoed Volant's retinue.
"We've been testing you," Volant continued. "Never ask for anything. Not ever. Not for anything, especially from someone who's more powerful than you are. They will offer and grant everything themselves. Sit down, proud woman."
Volant tore the heavy robe from Margarita's shoulders, and again she found herself sitting next to him on the bed.
"And so, Margot," continued Volant, softening his voice, "what would you like in return for having served as my hostess today? What do you wish for having gone naked at the ball? What value do you put on your knee? What damages did you incur from my guests, whom you just referred to as gallows birds? Speak, and do so without constraint, since it is I who have made the offer."
Margarita's heart began to pound. She heaved a sigh and started to collect her thoughts.
"Come now, show more courage," prompted Volant. "Arouse your imagination, give it free rein. Just witnessing the murder of that inveterate scoundrel of a baron should earn someone a reward, especially if that someone is a woman." "Well?"
Margarita's breath caught in her throat. And just as she was about to say the cherished words she had prepared in her soul, she suddenly turned pale. Her mouth opened, and her eyes bulged.
"Frida, Frida, Frida," cried an insistent, beseeching voice in her ears. "My name is Frida."
And Margarita, stumbling over her words, began speaking.
"So that means, then, that I can ask for one thing?"
"Demand, demand, my donna," replied Volant with an understanding smile. "Demand one thing."
Oh, how adroitly and precisely did Volant emphasize "one thing" in repeating Margarita's words. Margarita sighed again and said,
"I want them to stop giving Frida the handkerchief she used to smother her baby."
The cat raised his eyes skyward and sighed noisily, but said nothing, evidently recalling how his ear had been tweaked at the ball.
"Ruling out the possibility," Volant grinned, "that you've taken a bribe from that fool Frida, which would not be in keeping with your queenly dignity, I really don't know what to do. I suppose there is one thing. Get hold of some rags and plug up all the cracks in my bedroom."
"What are you talking about, monsieur?"
asked Margarita, perplexed by these truly baffling words.
"I agree with you completely, monsieur," interjected the cat. "Rags are just what you need."
And with that, he pounded his paw on the table in irritation.
"I'm talking about mercy," said Volant, explaining his words, his fiery eye still fixed on Margarita. "Sometimes it unexpectedly and insidiously slips through the narrowest of cracks. That's why I mentioned the rags."
"And that's what I was talking about, too," exclaimed the cat.
And just to be safe, he turned away from Margarita and covered his pointed ears with paws smeared in pink cream.
"Get out of here," Volant said to him.
"I haven't had my coffee yet," replied the cat, "so how can I leave? Surely, monsieur, on a holiday night like this, you're not dividing your dinner guests into two categories, are you?
some of first grade and others of second grade freshness, as that pathetic cheapskate of a bar manager would say.
Be quiet, ordered Volant, and turning to Margarita, he asked, Are you, everything considered, an exceptionally kind person? Highly moral?
No, replied Margarita forcefully. I know one has no choice but to be frank with you, and I'll tell